This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
The best bits of Joy Drive.
Last year, Australians lost more than $3 billion to fraud. That's according to the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission's latest targeting scams report. And already this week, I've received two attempts to scam money from me, one of which was the Dear Mum and Dad scam. Unfortunately, they called me Dear Mum, so I knew it was a scam straight away. Well, what were the top scams of last year? And what should we be on the lookout for this year? Well, Dr. Cassandra Cross is Associate Dean from the Faculty of Creative Industries, Education and Social Justice at Queensland University of Technology, joins us on the line. Cassandra, welcome to Joy Drive.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
$3 billion is an awful lot of money. What were the top scams of 2022?
Well, you're certainly correct. $3 billion is an incredible amount of money, and it's significantly higher than last year at $2 billion. So there's a lot of victims, sadly, that are out there. In terms of, I guess, the top scams for 2022, investment fraud was by far the greatest category. So nearly $1.5 billion of that loss, so basically half the losses, were attributed to fraudulent investment schemes, which more than doubled from the year before. So it's significant. We also saw remote access schemes up there in terms of financial losses.
When you say remote access, do you mean so people pretending to be able to, say, fix your computer or what have you and saying, you know what, if you give me access, I can log in and do it from here? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, so it's certainly not a new one, but it made a bit of a surge last year, particularly with an older demographic. So it is those phone calls generally that we've heard of from Microsoft or other technicians saying that there's a problem, being very helpful, trying to be helpful and saying that they can fix the problem for you straight away if they have access to your computer. And once you allow access, the offender is in and they're able to access details, access your accounts. And that's one of the reasons why we've seen such a rise in that category.
Do we know what the average amount is of that people are scammed?
There's certainly, I guess, a large spectrum of losses. So there are many people that lose fairly small amounts, although that can still be significant. And there are many that lose hundreds of thousands. I've spoken to victims that have lost millions. We do know that the average for last year was nearly $20,000, which is nearly, again, double from the year before where it was around $12,000. So I think we're seeing a rise in terms of numbers. We're also seeing a rise in financial losses. And also, I think awareness as well is driving up some of these reporting figures.
It's interesting because as you're talking, I'm thinking to myself, you know, we sort of, some of us feel, you know, a bit removed. Think, oh, well, I'll never be scammed. I'm always on the ball and I'm on the lookout for these fake texts and emails, etc. But it is quite easy, isn't it? And for people to fall victims of these scams.
Yeah, and I think what you've identified is one of the key challenges in this area is that nobody wakes up in the morning thinking that they're going to be a victim of a fraud or scam during that day. And offenders are really good at being able to, I guess, frame situations that are potentially plausible. They use a range of different techniques, social engineering techniques like authority and urgency to get you to react in the moment. They use a variety of psychological abuse techniques in terms of being able to try and manipulate and coerce people into doing things they wouldn't ordinarily do.
We're chatting with Dr. Cassandra Cross, the Associate Dean from the Faculty of Creative Industries, Education and Social Justice at Queensland University of Technology, about scams. Cassandra, are certain sections of the community falling victim or more vulnerable to these scams than others?
I think up front it's important for us to recognise that we're all vulnerable to fraud in some way. There are many different approaches out there, and I think everyone has a weakness or vulnerability that can be targeted. What we do learn from the stats from last year is that there are a number of groups that were overrepresented. So as I mentioned, older people were overrepresented in terms of financial losses, and a lot of that is from the remote access that I spoke about earlier. But we also saw in the stats that those living with a disability, Indigenous, and those from culturally and linguistically diverse communities were each overrepresented in the stats. So I think there's a challenge there in being able to I guess, create awareness and education programs that specifically target those demographics for the approaches that offenders are using.
Cassandra, I was receiving phone calls this week repeatedly from the same number. It was a Sydney number, and it was saying, oh, this is Telstra. And of course, I did some investigations and calls Telstra, and it wasn't them at all. It was someone else. But I tell you what, it had the same voice that the Telstra, a call center automated voice has as well. So I could easily have been scammed here, easily.
Yep. And I think that's one of the things we need to recognize is that offenders are becoming increasingly sophisticated in their approaches. So we do have technology at the moment that does allow for, I guess, replication of a number of genuine services that we interact with, and offenders are able to use these different types of technologies in order to create a plausible situation that potentially, I guess, is attractive to you and that you might believe and fall for.
Cassandra, what are the scam trends that we should be on the lookout for?
One of the biggest ones is around romance baiting. So it's probably a new term, but what it essentially does is takes investment schemes where people are offered an investment that doesn't exist, and romance fraud, which is where offenders use a relationship in order to get money. And it puts the two of them together. So offenders are creating relationships with people, initiating relationships on platforms, whether it's dating platforms or social media, etc. And then instead of asking for money, as we traditionally see, for an emergency or for something that's gone wrong, they're providing an opportunity for people to invest in usually cryptocurrency. So the victim thinks that they're just investing in a genuine scheme for the benefit of their relationship. The red flags don't go off. Mm-hmm. But essentially what they're doing is sending money to the offenders under a different guise. And we've seen romance baiting escalate in recent years, and it's, I guess, one of the newer combinations to really look out for.
Do these people, do they spend time sort of, I guess, grooming that relationship over a number of weeks or months, or is it more just they meet them online and then hit them later that day with the investment opportunity?
I think it's a little bit of both. So there are certainly victims I've spoken to that have been asked for money up front quite quickly in the relationship. But I guess depending on the offender and the time that they have to invest in it, there are others that spend weeks, months and even years communicating with somebody before they get that initial request. So it is really difficult sometimes for people who feel that they are connected, they've developed trust and rapport with the person they feel they're in a relationship with, that when the request for money comes, whether it's direct money or this investment opportunity, it doesn't really raise as many suspicions because they feel they're in a genuine relationship.
Mm, what a horrible space to be in. I feel for those people. What about what other trends have we got?
We've certainly seen online shopping fraud escalate, and that's probably in kind of a result of the COVID pandemic that we have gone through and are still in many ways. And many of us are guilty of going online and doing a bit of online shopping. Mm-hmm. Offenders have really leveraged that and have created a number of false sites that look like genuine businesses. So it's really difficult sometimes when you're going online looking for products and services to figure out whether you're on a genuine site or whether you're on a fake site. So offenders have really taken, I guess, prominence with that. We've seen it with jobs and employment fraud as well. So before the pandemic, one of the red flags for a fake job opportunity was working from home and flexibility. And we know now that that's really a mandatory requirement for many people and a deal breaker in many ways. So offenders are creating these fake job opportunities, advertisements, they don't exist. But what they're able to do is to get CVs from individuals, which has a lot of personal information in it. And sometimes they also ask upfront for training costs and for materials. And they are then able to, with the CV, perpetrate identity fraud, and with the payments, just take that money up front.
Well, so that's preying on people who are in need of work.
Absolutely, because we have seen a shift in terms of employment and with precarity in a number of spaces, and people are out there looking for jobs, and sadly, in many cases, they're giving over their personal information in what they think is a genuine job opportunity, but sadly, it's not.
Okay, what else have you got for us?
Recovery schemes are making a bit of a comeback, and this is really quite sad in many ways. We know that offenders do trade information with each other around kind of, I guess, successful victims. So if I've been able to get an amount of money out of someone and then they've stopped sending money, I can trade those details with other people. who will then approach the victim again, usually posing as law enforcement, as police, who know everything about what's happened and promise that they can actually get the money back, that they've got the people in custody, they can prosecute, but they need a fee in which to do that. So that's why it's called recovery, because people, victims, are trying to get their money back and inadvertently send more money to the offenders.
Yeah, they'll try anything, won't they?
Yeah, I mean, I think we can't underestimate the creativity and innovation of offenders and just the length that they will go to try and create scenarios and situations for individuals. As I said, it differs between different people. So the ways that I might be vulnerable and that you might be vulnerable and your listeners might be vulnerable are going to be very different. And offenders are good at identifying what that potentially is and targeting a scheme for that particular weakness.
Cassandra, before we let you go, what changes do you feel need to be made to help protect us all more from these scams?
There's certainly a range of things, but I think up front what we need to do is what you and I are doing right now, which is actually just talking about it. So for far too many years, fraud victimisation has really been silenced. There's a lot of stigma and shame that victims feel when they lose money in these circumstances. So I think what we need to do as a society is take away some of the shame and stigma and really talk about it in a, I guess, a constructive and open way. We know that these are out there. We know that everyone's being targeted from the text messages you mentioned or from emails, etc. And I think we need to kind of bring out some of the, take away some of the shame and isolation, because that really only feeds into the offenders. So we need to talk about this openly and not be afraid to ask questions or advice from others around us if we get approached.
And where is the best place to report scams, Cassandra?
Report Cyber is the national online reporting portal for many of these things and a range of cyber crimes. ID Care are a really good form of support for those who may have been victims of a number of these schemes, as well as any of the data breaches that have recently been happening. And ScamWatch is a really good website for prevention advice and to learn about the different categories I've talked about today.
Cassandra, really important conversation. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us on Drive this afternoon.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
That's Dr. Cassandra Cross, Associate Dean from the Faculty of Creative Industries, Education and Social Justice at Queensland University of Technology.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app, no matter where you are. Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.